This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Election season is underway, and so people focus on issues, and that's understandable, and issues matter. Inflation matters. Immigration matters. Taxes, spending, these things matter. All of these things matter. I get all that. But one thing you don't see a ton of anymore is people talking about cultural things, culture war things during presidential elections. And I understand why that's the case. People get really nervous to bring that up. You don't want to turn this guy off or that guy off. Hey, just vote for me. I'll lower your taxes. But the culture of your country is the most important thing. It really genuinely is. Think about it in this way. If we were starting a country, we'll call it the Republic of Jesse, of course. Think about the Republic of Jesse. What if thievery, stealing, was legal, encouraged, and accepted? Just, if you wanted something, you took it. You walk in a store, you want something, you grab it, you walk off. Your neighbor, maybe he has something really nice, like an ice maker. You walk in his house, you grab it, you take it home. But what kind of a country, what would that do to a nation? It'd be horrible for the country. The country itself, it didn't matter what the tax rates were. The country would be a horrible, horrible place. Culturally, it would be rotted. And vice versa. What if you had a country that was packed full of people who were extremely honest? You could leave $1 million in cash sitting on a tabletop, come back a week later and still be sitting there because the people were so unbelievably honest. What kind of a society would that be? You don't know anything about the tax rates or the laws or anything else, but what kind of a country would that be? It's a guarantee that country would be a good place to live, isn't it? Now that brings us to where we are now. You see, the communists understand very, very well that culture is everything. You don't see these people out there screaming about tax rates as often as you see them yelling and screaming about being woke.
You know, we have to stay woke. Like, everybody needs to be woke. and you can talk about if you're the wokest or woker, but just stay more woke than less woke. Yeah.
I actually don't like that term. I know we've used that term. I've used that term before many times on this show, but I actually don't like woke because it really, it softens what it is. It's evil. It's demonic. It's cultural Marxism. It is destroying so many people in this country. It's destroying men. It's destroying women. It's destroying children. The things these people will now talk about right out in the open, the horrible, demonic things these people will talk about, blows me away. Just digest this. I want you to watch Dome talking about tranny surgery for illegals and just think about that.
When I was Attorney General, I learned that the California Department of Corrections, which was a client of mine, I didn't get to choose my clients.
Right, a client of the Attorney General.
A client of the Attorney General, right. Of the Office of Attorney General, that they were standing in the way of surgery.
For prisoners.
For prisoners. And there was a specific case. And when I learned about the case, I worked behind the scenes to not only make sure that that transgender woman got the services she was deserving. So it wasn't only about that case. I made sure that they changed the policy in the state of California so that every transgender inmate in the prison system would have access to the medical care that they desired and need. And I believe it was not only, I know it was historic in California, but I believe actually it may have been one of the first, if not the first in the country, where I pushed for that policy in a Department of Corrections.
So we have a country now with a bunch of dudes who believe they can chop off parts of their body to become women. A bunch of women believe they can chop off parts of their body to become men. Okay, that in and of itself would be bad. It would be bad if a politician at any level was quietly encouraging any of this stuff. Quietly encouraging it at your expense, taxpayer expense, is even more egregious. That would be even worse. But maybe the most jaw-dropping thing about all that is our politicians are comfortable now bragging about that on camera and in person. Bragging that we physically mutilate human beings in this country and we pretend, we play make-believe with them as if they can switch the sex they were born with. God, jeez. I honestly, remember this, speaking of the tranny stuff, remember this from Trump? Remember he said this?
We will not have men playing in women's sports. That will end immediately.
Okay, that's a fine position to take. I'm glad he has that position, but why does he have to have that position? Think about that. Why is that a thing that the Republican nominee for president even has to bring up? Why is it a thing that dudes compete against chicks in sports? Again, woke. I don't think it's the right word for it. This is evil. It's wrong. It's not just unfair to women, it's unfair to everybody. What we've done in this country, what we've done to people's minds. The culture war is not some ridiculous side issue. The culture war is everything. These people know it's everything too. Remember when Kamala Harris brought up sending the Department of Justice as if it's a pit bull after life, after pro-lifers?
And on the issue of access to reproductive health care, for example, and again, it's my background, perhaps fighting for justice through the courts, I am prepared to say that for any state that passes a law that violates a woman's constitutional right to reproductive health care, that our Department of Justice will stop that law from going into effect.
The Department of Justice doesn't have that authority. It's not reproductive health care. That's a demonic, dishonest term you're using to kill an unborn baby. But these people view the government as a tool for their sick cultural goals. They don't get into office and just twist themselves in knots about taxes here and spending there. They get into office and they start tearing through this culture like a blowtorch through butter. And they take the most deranged freaks and put them in positions of power in our government. Do I need to remind you that this human being is an admiral?
Hello, I'm Admiral Rachel Levine. Climate change is having a disproportionate effect on the physical and mental health of Black communities. Black Americans are more likely than white Americans to live in areas and housing that increase their susceptibility to climate-related health issues. And 65% of Black Americans report feeling anxious about climate change's impact. Through our Office of Climate Change and Health Equity and the Office of Environmental Justice, we're working with providers and community leaders to identify innovative approaches that empower communities to address the health consequences linked to climate change.
We've played that for you before, but just take that in. A dude pretending to be a woman, giving a little monologue, a little speech about climate change, which is also not real, somehow affecting Black people more than white people. Just the levels of insanity and depravity we've gotten to in this country, it's shocking when you sit back and take it all in. Culture is not a ridiculous side issue. Culture is everything. I don't need to know anything about your form of government or anything else. If you tell me you have a country full of stable nuclear families with a dad, a mom in the home raising children, I don't need to know anything else about your country. Your country will be a successful country. If you have a country full of mentally ill people who believe they can become a woman by chopping their penis off, and that climate change somehow affects black people more than white people, you are in very, very, very deep doo-doo, and that is apparently where we are as a nation. Anyway, all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Mary Margaret Olehan joins us in a moment to discuss all these things. Hang on.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
If Donald Trump were to be reelected, he will sign a national abortion ban. Understand, in his Project 2025, there would be a national abortion, a monitor that would be monitoring your pregnancies, your miscarriages.
Well, there she goes again. It's a lie. I'm not signing a ban, and there's no reason to sign a ban, because we've gotten what everybody wanted, Democrats, Republicans, and everybody else. And every legal scholar wanted it to be brought back into the states, and the states are voting.
You want to know one of the most disheartening things I remember politically? We had moved to Virginia for a year. I was still working in politics. This is after I lost two congressional runs. And so when you're in kind of a purplish swing state, you get these swing state ads, the ones they think are really going to move the needle. So, you know, Republicans would have run one on immigration, stuff like that. Virtually every ad, this is in the Obama era, virtually every Democrat ad was about abortion. It's all they care about. It's all they campaign on. And apparently it works. Joining me now, Mary Margaret Olehan, wonderful D.C. correspondent for the great Daily Wire. Mary, people don't understand this. I don't understand this level of depravity, and I'm a terrible human being. But people will vote just so they can murder their babies, and there's like lots of them.
Well, the Democrats have been very, very good at marketing abortion. The way they market abortion to the American public is you're going to lose your ability to make choices about your body. You know, this is a women's issue. So all women who care about their ability to have sexual relationships or their ability to do what they desire should be voting against Trump. That's the Democrat message on this. And if you notice, Jesse, they don't actually say the word abortion very much. That's not, it's kind of taboo now. What they say is reproductive rights. They'll talk a lot about choice, a lot about danger. You know, they'll say if former President Donald Trump becomes president again, then women will be in danger, women will die. And their latest favorite anecdotal evidence is that women will die because of, quote unquote, Trump abortion bans like Georgia's pro-life law, which, by the way, is not a Trump abortion ban. It's a pro-life law that Georgia, the state, enacted before Roe v. Wade was overturned. And they're using examples of women who actually died because of complications with abortion pills, not because of pro-life laws. And they're using these stories and manipulating these stories to try and claim that pro-life laws are endangering women. When at the end of the day, I've spoken with pro-life lawmakers, I've spoken with women who run pregnancy centers, I've spoken with activists on the ground, and what they tell me is they want to protect women, they want to protect babies, they want to protect young girls from traffickers. They're not interested in hurting women, and they believe that groups like Planned Parenthood actually don't care about women at all and are more interested in furthering a leftist agenda.
Which, of course, that is all they're interested in. And the abortion pill itself is something I'm positive you and I could go off on a long tangent on. I don't think the American people understand that 50% of the abortions now take place in a woman's bathroom, and the baby ends up in the toilet. It's just the most demonic freaking thing I've ever heard in my life, Mary.
It's horrific. And, you know, I see constantly media lying about these abortion pills. You know, Caitlin Collins on CNN had the audacity to repeatedly claim that these pills are safe, safer than Tylenol, I believe she said. Well, I don't think she's talking to any real activists on this issue. or I should say experts on this issue, because if you know, if you talk to some of these OBGYNs who are looking at this fairly, not from the perspective of an abortion activist, they will tell you that these pills are actually dangerous. I've spoken with women who described to me laying on their bathroom floor, suffering from very serious complications alone as they deal with this abortion at home of their own baby. It's traumatic. They have PTSD. They have very severe side effects and after effects such as depression, anxiety, remorse. You know, there's just a lot that goes on here. And in the case of Amber Thurman in Georgia, this woman died because of complications with the abortion pill. But the way that Kamala Harris and other pro-abortion lawmakers are framing this is Amber died because of a pro-life law. And they know that they can get away with it because our mainstream media has no interest in actually telling the truth on this topic. Our mainstream media takes a story like Amber Thurman, sees the reality of it, that these women died because of abortion drugs, and says, you know what, let's just say they died because of a pro-life law, and they're allowed to get away with it. So there is massive media manipulation on this topic. They do the bidding of groups like Planned Parenthood, the National Abortion Rights Action League, Emily's List, you name it. All of these groups have media style guides, and they literally tell outlets like Washington Post, Associated Press, this is how you talk about this issue. So for example, don't say heartbeat, say fetal cardiac activity. Don't say late-term abortion, say abortions later in pregnancy. It's honestly Orwellian, Jesse, the way that our media just literally says, yep, we'll do what you want us to do, abortion activists, we got this.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Mary, because a lot of people don't know the inside baseball of that and how deceptive all their language is. And that's why they choose, really, all their language. It doesn't matter the issue. We're talking about abortion today. But all their language is designed to deceive. We want to do something horrific. We want young women butchering their children en masse. But we can't say that. So you have to call it reproductive care and all that other gobbledygook commie crap you just mentioned.
Exactly. And, you know, this is true of abortion. It's also true of gender issues. Pretty much any hot button cultural topic right now. On the left, they create style guides and they tell reporters how to talk about it. I could go off for hours about that because, you know, as a reporter myself, I see how important language is. You know, when I'm writing about one of these topics, if I'm not speaking the truth about it, it's very easy for readers and, you know, other Americans out there to not understand what we're actually dealing with. But when we're talking about abortion, we should be really clear. You know, if we're talking about a quote-unquote abortion ban, we should be saying exactly what that means. So if Georgia has a law protecting babies with a heartbeat, we should be saying that. We shouldn't be saying fetuses that have cardiac activity. That's a weird scientific attempt at obscuring what's going on here. The reality is that there's a baby and that baby has a heartbeat, and maybe you don't recognize that baby as a person, but we should still be able to talk about it in realistic terms. And so, you know, the left has really mastered the language narrative. The right is kind of waking up to it, but they're behind the ball.
Yeah, what a shock, we're behind the ball. You know, something that doesn't get a lot of play is the collective hissy fit from the Justice Department after the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Roe versus Wade get overturned. A bunch of demonic women who want to kill children decided they were going to rage about it, and they started using the FACE Act to throw old women in federal prison for the rest of their lives. Do I have that right?
Pretty much, and I'm so glad you brought this up, Jesse, because most people don't understand this properly. When Roe v. Wade was overturned, the Department of Justice specifically said, we're going to use this FACE Act to prosecute pro-lifers as a response to the overturn of Roe v. Wade. And I'm not exaggerating. A DOJ official literally said that. And they've been doing it. They have put a number of pro-life activists behind bars. Why? Because these pro-life activists protested outside of abortion clinics or tried to ask women or stop women from going into the abortion clinic to get an abortion and end the life of their baby. Meanwhile, all over the country, there have been attacks on pregnancy centers and attacks on Catholic churches. Hundreds, I might add. Catholic Vote has some really good trackers if you're interested in seeing the craziness. You know, firebombings, beheadings of statues of Jesus, graffiti on pregnancy centers that say, if abortions aren't safe, then neither are you. All kinds of vandalism. And this FACE Act that the DOJ has been weaponizing specifically protects not just abortion clinics, but also pregnancy centers and Catholic churches. That's literally in the legislation. And yet the DOJ has very little interest in prosecuting these cases as FACE Act cases. They have overwhelmingly prosecuted pro-lifers, and I believe have only actually prosecuted individuals with FACE Act violations related to pregnancy centers in two cases, and no Catholic churches. So, you know, there's a lot of critics on the right and across the board that have told me that they believe the DOJ is completely weaponized against pro-lifers, and that there should be no surprise on our part when we see that these Catholic churches and pregnancy centers are largely left to fend for themselves, because the DOJ doesn't care about these things. The DOJ's own Kristen Clark has said that she thinks pregnancy centers are dangerous and only exist to deter and misinform women.
Yeah, well, in case we were wondering whether or not we're the good guys in this fight. Mary, Margaret, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
The education system. It is far and away the worst thing the communists took over in this country, because the entire country is filtered through the education system. A huge reason everything is so far left is we filter every American through the dirty jockstrap of the American education system, and now we have a bunch of morons who love socialism. Joining me now, he is the VP, VP of business something at Liberty University. Dave Brack keeps getting promoted. I can't keep his titles in line. Dave, you're basically running things at Liberty now, right? I'm just going to go with that.
The invisible hands running stuff, and I'm helping out, yeah.
All right, Dave. Well, they didn't take over the education system by accident. I wish more Americans understood this. It wasn't like they just tripped and fell and took over all the teachers' unions and the university system. They did it on purpose.
Yeah. No, that's right. It goes way back. And I think Americans are kind of catching on. You know, a couple decades ago, if you said we're in a spiritual war, people would look at you cross-eyed. Now people, you say, and they go, well, of course, Dave, that's what's happening, right? And so, you know, Harvard was founded as a Christian school. John Harvard came from Oxford, a Christian school. Their motto was truth for Christ and church at Harvard, right? And then the leftists and the Marxists and the communists, you know, who don't have a worldview, they don't have a God, they think they're God. That's the problem. And those forces have taken over education because the Christians got weak, right? We compromised, and with our constitution, we wanted to have fair play. So we said, we'll just do secular ethics, right? We'll do Aristotle and talk about the common good. So then we moved toward neutral language. We gave up our faith in God. We took God out of the schools. That was the first mistake. And then it proceeded from being neutral to going Marxist, right? Not the old Marxist, you know, capital versus labor, but the neo-Marxist thing. Is the march through the institutions. That's the common phrase. You can go Google that. That's all the modern neo-Marxist guys. And they knew capital versus labor wasn't working, right? So they separated everybody into different classes by race and gender and every color of the flag. And now, just like ESG and DEI, you're forced to say you agree with that philosophy and worldview, or you get punished. And the kids get punished, and the parents get punished. And now it's reached the point that they can change the gender of your kid within some school districts, and they don't have to tell the parents. And if you don't think that's out of control, I don't know what to tell you.
Dave, you said the American people are catching on, and I believe you're correct about this. COVID certainly helped a lot. Now, the question is, is the education system going to be forced to reform because parents are catching on? They're more reluctant to send $100,000 to some dirtball commie university so it can ruin Aiden, Jaden, and Braden. Is this going to prompt reforms in the education system?
Not yet. We're just warming up. Christians have become very weak. We have become Gnostics in a way. A lot of the evangelical church has spiritualized everything. That's called Gnosticism. It's like, then why did God create us with bodies on earth? So we have a lot of soul searching to do to return back, you know, back to the Revolutionary War or Civil War period or World War II even. There was no question. If your country was under attack, you went and fought and killed people, and there were good guys and there were evil people. And we knew all this. The Christians have just we've gotten complacent also because we become rich. And so we don't want to judge. And then, you know, we just had a CEO summit at Liberty. And, you know, CEOs off in the Fortune 500, they've been captured, right? Robbie Starbuck is taking on this stuff and having huge success. But the left fights dirty. And the Christians have always fought, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. So they'll fight a little bit, but they won't fight hard. And so there's we're still in a minority position. I'd say about 10, 20% max of parents within a school district are willing to take a public position in public that, hey, this is not okay. And I'm putting my reputation out there. And we need to get back to our founding logic and to the biblical logic where we believe in good and evil again. And it's worth fighting for, or you're not going to have freedom for the next generation.
Dave, you've mentioned many times, you and I have had this conversation, that it is a spiritual war. And if you can find any benefit to our culture of Sodom and Gomorrah now, it is that I think a lot of people, even people who aren't, you know, traditional churchgoers, they're waking up to maybe not God, but they understand the devil is real. When you're chopping children's penises off and bragging about it on camera, you've reached a point in society where demons are here.
Yeah, no, that's right. And at the international level, too, I had Noor bin Laden on this morning on a show, and she characterized it about as best as I ever. She said, these globalists have made a Faustian bargain, a deal with the devil. And she said, in order to obtain just a sliver of power on earth. But the power is illusory, right? As Americans, we think, okay, these bad guys, they just want riches and power and, you know, control or whatever. That's bad enough. That's evil, right? But what she was saying, that Faustian bargain with the devil, that's not a metaphor anymore, right? And it wasn't a metaphor back when it was written. And people used to believe there was that category of evil, right? So love has been trivialized, right? Now there's a love sign out in front of every mall, right? Big red, love, 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 I love my Subaru, all the lefties drive those, right? And what they miss is that the same God that offered his son in love also offered up the 10 commandments and 613 moral laws to the Jews. And he was also a God of wrath that judges, and everybody will meet their maker. And it's not just religious, Plato and Aristotle and all of them. They had to posit an afterlife and God because they knew there was not justice on earth. Justice does not get done here. And so a higher power that's reasonable even dictates there will be judgment. And no one, you know, the preachers these days, all it is love, love, love. No, it's a lot harder than that. Jesus died because we're sinners and there's justice, right? Somebody had to take on that sin of the world, right? So God took it upon himself, but that doesn't let you off the hook. And so we got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, we certainly do. Dave, my brother, as always, appreciate you. Yes. All right, speaking of Robbie Starbuck, we're gonna talk to Robbie Starbuck about what he's been doing next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
What do communists understand? We talk about this all the time, you and I. What do they understand? Two things. Only two things. You can try to reason with your liberal Aunt Peggy. You can try to bring her facts. See that you can do all these things, but communists only understand fear and pain. We don't like talking like that. I mean, it sounds too dark, but that's all they understand. They're religious zealots. How would you deal with a radical jihadi? He only understands fear and pain. You're not going to talk him out of it. Well, how do we visit pain on the communists in a legal way? Because that's what we want to be, legal, nonviolent. We want to win. Robbie Starbuck is one of the people. He is killing it out there in his own way. He's going after these corporations. The second most damaging thing the communists ever took over in this country is the corporate world. The first is the education system. But the corporate world, they take all of our money and they use it against us, against our own country, against our own values. And Robbie sniffed this out, and he's been dragging these companies out into the public, and now he's put the fear of God in them. Joining me now, my friend, filmmaker and activist, Robbie Starbuck. Robbie, this is your mission, not mine. I don't have anything to do with it. So you tell me, what are you doing?
Well, essentially, you know, it's not lost on me. Yes, I've had a thesis for quite some time that, you know, we're facing a threat from New Age communists. And really, the only thing that's different with them that is really important is that they no longer need to seize the means of production to be a communist. You know, that's sort of like what our grandparents had in their head about communism. And it was a central part of Marxism. However, these New Age communists understood something very important. That doesn't look so good to average normal people when the state comes in and seizes everything, right? So why would you take the optic hit of admitting you're a communist and seizing the means of production if you could just seize the minds of the people in charge of production? So your corporate CEOs, your board of directors, so on and so forth. And so for the past, I'd say, decade to 15 years, there's been a concerted effort to fill those boards and the C-suite with as many people as they can who are ideologically minded in the same direction they are, or who can be controlled. And so when you looked at this issue, and why I've been very successful getting companies to drop their crazy policies, you know, from A to Z, it's really that nobody's taken this on in a way that is an approach that has like an actual battle plan, you know, and ours is that we recognize this all was built up through accelerationism after George Floyd. They used George Floyd as sort of the excuse to bring a bunch of this stuff in. And you had a lot of radicals empowered in the process because CEOs either were along for it because they're true believers, or they were afraid, deathly afraid of being called racist, which is one of the most insane things ever. I mean, anybody who has that frame of mind, I will never understand. But essentially, we understood that accelerationism brought us here. So how do we move the Overton window back to sanity? Because people are tired. You know, that's kind of the general mood I get in the country is most people are just really tired of the BS. They're tired of all the crazy woke stuff. So we've had that exhaustion set in, so there's a lot of public support for what we're doing. And we realized if we want this to be successful, we need to target the companies that primarily depend on conservative consumers first, because we're such a sizable cross-section of their customers that they can't survive without us. And Bud Light already put a lot of fear into them because they saw, oh, these people will use their wallets as a weapon. And that was just a starting point. You know, so we identified the companies kind of off the bat that are the ones that we could really move, you know? And so we did that. We started with Tractor Supply, got them to drop all their crazy policies, then John Deere. And then this was a very important one because three is where you go from, oh, that's cool. That's, you know, maybe kind of a happy circumstance of a lot of different accidents happening. And maybe this company just, you know, decided to do the right thing. But when you get to three, it's now a pattern, right? And psychologically, that was a very important company, Harley Davidson, that we chose to be number three because they had a true believer as CEO. So it was going to be a David versus Goliath battle between the true believer and the people, you know, myself and sort of all the people that I represent through what we're doing. And I think they wanted to dig their heels in, but they only lasted 3 weeks because the damage was immense. We went at them with the fire and vigor that our politicians should be going after every issue in this country. We were relentless in every step. And so they couldn't take the barrage. And ultimately what happened is, you know, we timed this around the Sturgis event. And Sturgis is the largest biker event in the country, but maybe the world. And so when Sturgis came around, you have 90% of these riders riding Harleys, and they refused to go to the Harley tents. And so Harley's tents were a ghost town. It was such an embarrassment that Bloomberg reported that Harley packed up 2 days early and went home. You had Harley riders taking their emblems off and turning them in. It was just pure insanity. And at the same time, you had videos going viral online that we were putting out, but also that biker influencers were putting out, including some who blew up their Harley Davidsons as a statement piece against the CEO, saying that they were done with the brand after, you know, decades and decades with them. So that was an important point, that inflection point of them groveling and changing. It told a lot of other corporate executives that they did not want to go through this same thing. And so something interesting started to happen. These CEOs started flipping on their policies without us ever releasing a video. We just had to reach out to them and say, hey, we're working on an investigation. Here's what we found. You know, we want to give you the opportunity to correct anything that's wrong. And then those companies would turn right around and they would cut their policies in order to get us to not put out the negative video. And for us, it's not like a blackmail thing. It's just like, hey, we're going to put out this story unless we're wrong and there's a better story about you guys changing. So just let us know. That's been amazingly effective. We've gotten Jack Daniels and their parent company to drop their policies, Lowe's, Ford, just last week on Friday, Caterpillar, Coors, we're Indian Motorcycle. I mean, we're going down such a list now. We're well over 10 that I'm starting to forget names of some that we flipped. So that's a good sign. We're going to continue this and it's going to be one by one until we achieve some semblance of sanity in corporate America.
Robbie, I love what you're doing for a variety of reasons, but man, it just hits you when you list the way you just listed them right there. When you think about Caterpillar, I've been in the Caterpillar plant in Peoria, Illinois, on a frigging machine myself. Caterpillar, Tractor Supply, Harley, these are companies that are supposedly sharing our values. And my point is, there are people who've been taking our money and using it against us for years. It was really the ultimate takeover by the commies.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was right under our noses. And the truth is, this goes back to kind of a larger issue, right? Because you talk about education being the worst thing that has sort of been taken by the left. The reality is all of these things happened because of a few things. Number one, weakness and cowardice in men is a virus that must be eradicated. We have way too many men who don't want to get political, quote unquote. And in reality, it's just like, I don't want to be uncomfortable, okay? I don't know where these guys came from, who they were raised by, but it's time to get uncomfortable. If people think I enjoy every aspect of what I'm doing, I don't. But you have to do things that will make you maybe unpopular in certain circles, because it's important to tell the truth and do the right thing at this time, because we could lose our damn country if we don't. And beyond that, there's another thing. It's bothered me for a long time now. I think the biggest mistake the right has ever made, ever, in my lifetime at least, is the idea of adopting, embracing, and celebrating being a silent majority. It is the dumbest thing you can be a part of. I don't want to be a part of a silent majority, because silent majorities allow very loud, crazy groups of people to run your country. It allows them to dictate policy. It allows them to choose what happens in your kids' schools. A silent majority is for fools. We need to speak up. And I think more people are becoming aware of that reality, and they don't want to be part of a silent majority. They don't want to be this silent person who allows crazy people to dictate their life. So my hope is that this election can be one that marks the end of the silent majority and marks the beginning of a very loud majority who makes it clear what direction they want their country to run in, and that they will hold politicians and executives accountable if they step out of line. That's my hope, my dream. You know, I think most people in my position, where, you know, my family fled Cuba and they lost everything to communism, I always urge people who are like, maybe this guy is just kind of seeing things through, you know, his own lens, his own biases. Go talk to anybody whose family has survived communism and ask them where they think this country's at right now. Ask them. you're going to get the same answers you're getting from me. All the signs are there. Every single one is there. Our country is principally trying to be taken over by radical leftists who want to create a new form of communism. And if you doubt that, you're just not paying attention. If you think that I'm not being serious when I say they are seeking to control the minds of the executives who control production, who control big business, just look at big tech. They're a great example. They act as an arm of the state for the ruling party, for the Democrats. That's a look into the future at what they want in every segment of business.
Robbie, one thing that I have noticed in following your work and what you're doing, and I love this, is the Human Rights Campaign, how they always seem to be involved with these corporations. This is not an organization the norms and normas even know about. They don't know who they are. They have no idea how powerful the HRC is, but they are extremely powerful and they are involved in corporate America. Who are they?
The HRC essentially is a radical leftist group that seeks to get Republicans out of politics. I mean, that's the best way I could put it. It's really funny. I hate calling them the Human Rights Campaign because there's nothing about them that has to do with human rights. It's like, you know, introducing a bill in Congress called the Vote Yes If You Love Puppies Act, and then inside it mandates that you slaughter every puppy in America. In reality, the Human Rights Campaign is just an activist group that hates Republicans. Okay. They hate conservative policy and they're advocating for the furthest left, most insane version of America you could possibly imagine. And so you have to wonder, how did it become the norm that corporations are giving them millions and millions of dollars and subscribing to this CEI index score, which is basically, it's a social credit system. Okay. So corporate equality index. And in it, you have to do certain things to get a 100% score. Some of those things you have to do is provide coverage in your healthcare plan to get people sex changes. And I'm not just talking about the employees. Keep in mind, there's not an exclusion for children. So the children can get their puberty blockers and they can get their hormone treatments. And God forbid, even in the places where they allow those, I hate calling them surgeries, really mutilations. You know, this is stuff that is underneath that 100 score at a company that they then tout. And the thing is, nobody's ever held them accountable for touting these scores. Nobody's ever held them accountable for working with a group and giving them millions of dollars whose president just said at a gala that Trump hates America and framed Republicans as an existential threat to the country. Okay. They would never give a dime to a right-wing group who was doing the opposite version of what the HRC does. That point has been one that executives, I think, are listening to and they realize looks pretty extreme and radical. So I think we're going to continue to see corporations back away from the HRC as they should, because they're essentially an extremist group on the far left. And there's no reason for corporations to be submitting themselves to the humiliation ritual that you essentially have to submit yourself to get a 100% score through them. And it does them precisely what? Nothing. It's a liability. There's nobody who goes to a company and goes, oh, I wonder what their HRC score is. The only reason people are wondering that now at all is because they want to see if the company is giving money or participating in this, because they don't want to do business with them if they are. There is no positive upside to these behaviors and actions that corporate America has taken. They just needed to be taken to task for it. And so that's what we're doing. We have a mission in front of us. We are going to take these companies to task one by one, if necessary, to eliminate these far left extremist groups that they are supporting.
Robbie, really quickly, how do people, if there is a whistleblower out there at a major corporation and they want to send in a tip or some info, how do they do that?
They can go to robbystarbuck.com. It's Robbie with a Y, by the way. So R-O-B-B-Y, starbuck.com/DEI. And there's a tips page where you can give us a tip about what's going on and send us evidence of what's going on. And we are blessed to have so many of those people who are giving us tips that are helping us to really bring sanity back to corporate America. That's our goal. We're not going to stop. We're not going to just sit back and let communism happen to our country. We're going to fight. And I think that's what everybody has to have in their heart. We've got to fight for this country and everything we do. We've got to stand up, use our voices, use every legal means we can to win this country back. We need a sane country again. And to get a sane country, we need sane schools. We need sane corporations. We just need sanity back. And that's going to take all of us doing our part.
No doubt. Robbie, you're the man. Thank you, my brother, for what you do. All right. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
We have to win in November. And it's not just defeating Kamala Harris, remember that. We have 1,000 battles to fight. And we're gonna have 1,000 more next year. These are school board races, state house, Senate, House of Representatives. There are so many battles to fight. We cannot be disheartened and we can't be overconfident. If we like the looks of the polls, the stakes are high. And like I've said before, if the presidential race doesn't go our way, and I hope it will, I think it will, but if it doesn't go our way, we're not done yet. Victory is so many years away and so many battles away, victory or defeat. We have to fall in love with the fight and the process, all right? We can defeat these people. We'll do it again.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.